and we've just watched Tomb of the Cybermen.
Love that music.
The music. Alex, you were saying you thought that was the best beginning of...
Yeah, because I think it's just the cool analog effects you can't really reproduce digitally. And, like, the current 13 Doctor opening is really, really cool and so on. But if it's just CGI, it's like, oh, it just did some really cool CGI and, you know, just rendered it for, like, a week to make it look good. This is just an entirely analog effect. And I know, just to get kind of this flowing thing which is produced.
Apparently it was done with two mirrors facing each other. So one was a one-way mirror. And the other one was a full mirror. So they had a camera behind the one main mirror looking at the other one, and they drove through, or had a cart going through the BBC car park. So you could vaguely see headlights and things.
Overall, the effects in Doctor Who were, for the time, really incredible.
Well, there were some effects there, and I mean, we laugh watching it, but they were actually quite impressive for the time, really.
And the budget. Yes. Back then, low-budget kids show that the BBC really didn't have
to
much
be
respect
fair, the BBC hasn't really gotten any better. Most of their effects sit at about the same price.
Although you don't have people reaching at the end there. I swear I saw someone reaching behind the Doctor and Jamie to place the Cybermat in the scene. It looked like someone wearing white just reached over and put something down behind them or pick something up. I'm like, was there a hidden secret coffee cup there that no one saw before they started?
It's Doctor Who, not Game of Thrones.
I always get those two confused. Funny that.
Most people do.
I really love the Doctor in this one. So this was the second Doctor, Patrick Troughton. He's just so relaxed throughout everything. He's this weird sort of clownish figure in some way, but more, I don't know, just relaxed.
This is the first time I've seen Troughton as Doctor Who, and I really like the chemistry between him and Jamie. Like, Victoria is just like, yeah, whatever.
Well, Victoria's a new character. So she'd only just began at this point.
There was a few funny moments in it. There was one point where he's going, oh, like, I wouldn't advise anyone go any further. This could be dangerous. And Jamie's like, oh, really? I was like, no, you're coming with me. Some of those little jokes, you can tell that they've built a rapport and they've got a good chemistry happening.
Well, Jamie was companion right through Troughton's.
I think he appeared in like the first or second episode of Troughton's and was all the way there till the last Troughton episode.
They were really good friends. They got on really well.
Yeah.
And they did have a great chemistry. Yeah. So
you can really see that. How far along into Troughton's reign is this episode? Is
second series, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember.
So it's season five.
Jeanette's brought out her books so we can just check out.
But
Jamie was, of course, the basis for a whole TV series.
Oh, yes, Outlander. So Outlander is actually Doctor Who fanfic.
No!
It's about Jamie.
So,
I think my character's called Jamie... And he fights in the Battle of Culloden.
Which is where Jamie's character was plucked out of time from, basically.
I knew it was like a Highlander, but God, I can't believe
it. It's time travel, and sure enough, it is Doctor Who fanfic.
To the point where the actor appears in Outlander as well. He appears in the production at one
Fraser
point in time.
Hines does get a minor role in Outlander.
I cannot wait to tell my sister, who is not a Doctor Who fan, but is very much an Outlander fan, so...
Doctor Who fanfic, yes. So this was the first serial in the fifth season.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, so it was the start of that year.
Troughton's fifth season or the fifth season
of the show. Probably at least another season. Probably.
And some of the arcs were quite long, they varied in length, but I think the longest arc from Old Who ever was in Troughton's tenure, and it was the final episode, it was the War Games, and it was
ten episodes. It went forever, yes.
Very few Troughton episodes survive. Most were trashed by the BBC.
Yep.
And they haven't been able to find... So they found a lot of the Hartnell ones, but a lot of the Troughton ones are missing.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, in fact, in 2013, just before the anniversary, they found some missing episodes that enabled them to complete one story and almost complete another.
Were they the ones they found in Africa? I think we've talked about this before. They found some in some old television station in Africa somewhere.
Which was amusing because one of them featured the Great Intelligence, which of course was a Doctor Who villain at that time, appearing in the new series of Doctor Who.
Yeah, had revived because Moffat did bring back a lot of the old
classic villains
from Old Who.
I found it was really interesting the parallels between old Doctor Who and new Doctor Who, it seems to be a common thing with the Cybermen. Whenever they have the Cybermen come back in the new episodes, it usually pretty much follows the pattern. Evil genius wants to take over the world and have control, yes. Builds the robots. The robots turn on him and turn him into, yeah. or yeah, them yeah. into a Cyberman as well. Yeah. And that is the
pretty
guy.
Close.
Yeah, that was yeah, pretty close. Pretty Other close. Than him not being getting turned into a Cyberman, that was pretty much spot yeah. on. I couldn't believe it. So there must be almost like a...
Yeah, the Daleks have that element to them as well. It's kind of evil genius who's already kind of a Dalek. And yeah. he makes the Daleks to be as much like him as he can make them.
But that's yeah. Davros. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Davros, yes.
This is
yes.
always
yeah.
a different evil
yeah.
genius.
Yeah, there's a different yes. evil genius, yes.
Although it's amusing you say that, because I don't think in the first two the Cybermen have sympathisers in that way, or people trying to take them over and control
no,
them.
No, they're just an outright enemy.
Just an outright enemy.
No, not yeah. intent. I haven't no. seen the second one.
The moon base. Yeah, yeah it's more or less the same.
That's one of those ones that was lost and is now just an animated recreation.
I have to assume that when they did the reboot, not only, you know, they're bringing back the old characters, but they're bringing back not the storylines, but the tropes.
Yes, the tropes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Which they have. They've brought back a lot of the tropes, which is really nice.
Yeah, and doing that, you know, I see so many parallels between early Doctor Who and the recent stuff because they're obviously doing it intentionally to bring back that.
That feeling.
Nostalgia, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But again, yeah. it, hearing it's new Who, it's also
nostalgia, fact. Feeling, or they just can't come up with anything.
Both. Both. Yeah. But yeah, I also compared this to New Who. They have, like, what, 2 hours worth of programme to have the plot run on, rather than having to solve it in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do drag, though. Like, this one and Tenth Planet felt that they could have been tightened up a lot.
As Gypsy was saying, she was 90% sure half of one of those episodes was the Cybermen leaving their tomb and climbing back in and leaving again.
Well, they paid a lot for the set angles, so they needed to use it.
And when they talk really slowly, so that takes up more time.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was annoying.
Yeah.
The voices, I was having trouble understanding at one stage, and then I realised they're intentionally going slow because they don't have the energy, but it's like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And I was trying to look at what accent the actor's trying to have.
I know, right?
How slow.
But even, like, the bad guys, I think they're supposed to be, like, a multinational team of archaeologists, but... Jeez, some of those accents.
Or the bad guy having a non-Western accent.
You couldn't think where it was. Yeah. It was like a bit German,
maybe,
a bit
maybe, you know, trying to be Eastern European.
I actually checked online. The actor was born in Cyprus.
Oh, okay.
So maybe he wasn't actually faking as much as what...
I did say when we watched it, I don't know whether that American, whether that was an English guy playing an American or whether that was really his voice because it was the 60s, but oh my God.
Yeah.
What'd you call him?
Captain Strongjaw. Same day.
Such a cliche.
A bad accent.
Except that all the way through his incredibly risk-averse.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he literally tells Victoria to, like, stay put and not worry her pretty little head off.
But what about
telling Victoria that the whole time?
Oh, well, let's talk about this a little bit.
Is
I mean,
a 1960s thing, is that just...
In Tenth Planet, the sexism. Female character is asked, what can you do? And she says, I can make some coffee.
Is that a Doctor Who thing? He said that. He goes, I've watched your pretty little head. And she turned around and she goes, is he always like this? Or something like she made some comments.
One of the first female companions, Barbara.
She was tough.
She was tough.
And objected to being asked to make the coffee.
Yeah, she was very against it.
And so
then,
it actually regresses.
Yeah, it got worse. And suddenly the companions were screamers.
Yeah, the original series was, who was the...
Verity Lambert was the producer. Yeah. So it had a strong female producing it. And I think her values kind of come through a bit.
Mm.
But after she leaves, it definitely gets
worse.
There was a second female Doctor Who companion called Zoe, who was slightly better. They were an improvement. But they were kind of this brainiac sort character who was programmed from birth sort thing to be a computer, because in that day and age, computers were, they're terrible. We'll have someone else to do the maths.
We'll genetically
engineer someone to do the maths instead of create a computer for it.
Yeah, that also explains why the logicians have so much power in this alternate Earth, rather than computers do this stuff. It's like, with the computer power of the Cybermen, we can do anything. It's like, we can do that anything with smartphones now. There's like a huge gap between how they had logicians.
So they had her, and she developed as a character. character to become more and more, I guess, human in a weird way.
Mm.
But that was about it. And that when the Doctor changed over, they changed the companions. The third Doctor started off with a relatively strong companion.
She was a scientist or something.
Yeah, she was a scientist, but he didn't like her or something. So they got rid of her, added in another screaming female companion.
Yeah.
He didn't have any male companions at all, and the next strong companion was kind of... Sarah Jane Smith was a bit of a screamer at points. Mm-hmm. Like,
basically, females are never really written well at all.
It wasn't until Fourth Doctor that they started trying to do things different with and their companions. They had Romana, who was just all-round brilliant.
So Romana was the best.
Who's the other one?
Leela was fun.
She was the kind of the warrior, tough... barbarian sort character. And then again, after those companions, it was mostly weak female companions up until Ace with the Seventh Doctor. Yeah,
yeah, who was really good.
So basically, like, a whole, like, 15-year period of no good women in the series.
No, not no good women, no good writing.
Poorly
written women. I do want to go back to what you were saying. I guess the bad guys in this episode, other than the Cybermen, were this group of archaeologists.
Middle Eastern.
But they were the Brotherhood of Magicians.
Magicians.
Oh, yeah, thank God. I thought I missed
that too.
What?
You see, that's actually a trope in sci-fi. Say, for example, Ringworld, or, you know, they have the Mentats. In Blake 7, they have, you know, these people who are the puppeteers that manipulate everything because their mental abilities are so high.
Yeah.
And so this group of shadowy figures that has huge mental powers that can control society.
Sure, and that's what these guys were they? They weren't just made up for that episode.
No. They were made up for that episode. It's just that it's a sci-fi trope from the time.
I just got very excited when he's like, "We are from the Brotherhood of Magicians." And I'm like, "Are you what?"
I got that first reaction too.
Yes.
But I went, just wait, he said logicians.
I went back to like Arrested Development and it's like, oh my God, Joe's part of this mysterious organisation.
I also like how they're trying to explain how the logical thing works and he basically just spouting a lot of crap and also just like, using the power series of just... Do you know what power series are?
No, don't think so.
It was actually a test to determine the logician themselves made up to be compared. Oh, that makes sense. So it was cool after all. Yeah. It was totally just made up stuff in order to justify having it be a difficult logic thing. It doesn't actually make sense. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
So the other thing was, of course, the black guy in here. He was the beast of burden in this episode.
Yeah. It was dodgy.
That was a bit worrisome.
If you went back to 10th Planet, for example, there was another... individual in that, and he was the
pilot.
He was the pilot, and so he was right front and center as one of the official people in that group.
You're seeing a regression.
Yeah, again, you're seeing a kind of regression in some ways. Yeah,
Or maybe like the higher ups were like, "No, we don't want anything too progressive. Let's be racist and sexist."
Yeah.
If we act too aggressively, they'll switch off and complain to, I don't know, who's the major power at the time?
Keep filth off of television.
Yeah. And complaining, like, this is filth because it says white people and black people are the same.
I think she was 17.
I think this is a bit early for her. It wasn't really major TV, I guess, at the time.
It was
pretty popular, but there wasn't much there, so it was easy to be popular.
In England, they had three channels.
Yeah.
two back then, even.
Yeah, it may have only been two back then.
Yeah, because, like, two channels.
I love the representation of technology in this.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be or massive big knobs that you have to push a long way. No buttons. Very few screens.
Well, I do like the design of having half a big black and half a big white so you can tell which way it is from a distance. Mm. From really bad 4 or 5 line TVs in black and white. But, this is obviously on because it's massively white.
I love how they trap the Cyberman behind that door and they're like, this will hold him. And then he just busts through it because it's just made of paper. Obviously paper thin.
Bursting out of the cake.
So that's where Matt Smith got the cake idea from in the
beginning episodes,
when he pops out of Rory's cake. He's just trying to copy the Cyberman.
Just copying the Cyberman, that's right.
So it was slightly harder material, because cake is actually denser than cardboard. Mm.
I thought it was really good how they actually kept on evolving the Cybermen. So go back to the 10th planet, they were wearing cloth bags over their heads with bits of tubing stuck in the sides of their heads.
They looked like really bad jumpsuits.
And they had a piano accordion on their front, as I said. But this time they'd sort of improved it a bit. They had plastic
helmets. When they went back to Mondasian Cybermen in the recent Who. I thought they were great. That was so scary.
Yeah.
Is that they're actually scarier than the modern Cybermen?
Yeah, I don't like the modern Cybermen. Yeah. I like the David Tennant Cybermen, but when they changed them over in like Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi's era, I just wasn't convinced.
What was the difference between the two?
They were better at dying.
Yeah. The second one was like sleeker and...
Define sleek.
The little toys, I've seen them. Stuff. There's one of the newer ones there, and just it doesn't look menacing. The previous ones were great hulking things of metal, but these other ones, they just looked a bit more weak and weedy, even though they weren't. But it was just like, they're not scary anymore.
The Capaldi one with Danny Pink was a bit like,
I wasn't a fan of those Cybermen.
I'm just thinking, I realised I haven't seen any of the Capaldi era stuff since it aired.
You saw it when it aired.
Yeah, I think it was more just that I didn't really care much for the writing at the time. And actually, Moffat just deciding to just put all the stuff in to make it seem more powerful and more attention than it actually was. And I just was turned off by him being all like, look at how amazing stuff we can do, and actually, you know, give any sort of interesting stories or good characters.
That's how I felt when Clara was introduced. Yes. I stopped watching.
Yeah. And I think, like, Clara was introduced when Clara was killed off.
It's nice that we agree on something.
Yeah. I think that specific, like, 2 to 3 year period was when it was at its worst, and then it kind
I think it was at its best. I love that period, I like Clara.
I like the darkness of Capaldi. I didn't like Clara, and I didn't like the writing of that
year. The issue that I had with the writing was that the writing was clearly written for someone like Matt Smith or David Tennant, someone who was younger. It is so evidently clear that if you were to put like Matt Smith or Tennant into that role, it would have been really, really good. They could portray, and probably there wouldn't be so much of like an age gap, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because like if Matt Smith was to come in on a tank playing a guitar, wearing sunglasses as his sonic screwdriver, I would be less likely to go, sure.
Yeah, basically, it feels like a midlife crisis
almost. Yeah. It's a midlife crisis stuff.
It's like of all the people to have the midlife crisis, it was Tennant anyway.
And Capaldi's a great actor. Yes. He was wasted. I just feel like I grieve for Capaldi's Doctor because I feel like it should have been better because I've seen the quality that he puts out and
I thought he was brilliant as the Doctor, so I had to disagree. Absolutely thought he was brilliant.
He was brilliant as the Doctor. I don't think the material he was giving
out was up and down.
All of Doctor Who has been up and down. All through.
The episodes that I realised how awkward the running was. No, it was like in the heart of the TARDIS, I think it was the episode. And basically they saved the day by just resetting history so it didn't happen. And that's the point where I realised that Moffat isn't really good at actually fighting the monsters, and the type of the episode isn't defeating the monster, it's some sort of explaining how Clara came to existence or something weird like that. And I realised, he's not actually trying to do any sort of let's defeat the villain sort of stories, he's just trying to explain his convoluted plot line, which didn't resolve all that well.
Yeah, I think he wasn't good at defeating the villain, so things like Listen, where there is no villain... And it's all that suspense, but in the end, it's kind of no villain. It's where Moffat's brilliant. And even in Blink, they're not defeating the villain.
No.
The story is about, you know, the time travel and getting around all that, and it's the human drama that makes it so good.
Moffat's like a budget Dave Filoni. He's okay. He does produce some good stuff, but Filoni's just better.
Who's Filoni?
Dave Filoni is the person behind Star Wars Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, which me and Gypsy have been watching quite a bit of recently.
We don't ask Star Wars questions, guys.
No. But, like, in all seriousness, I'm being completely honest, like, between the two, like, even just Capaldi's era versus Rebels, Rebels was written better as a kid's show. It was more enjoyable and it had a lot more going for it, whereas Capaldi is supposed to be something that appeals to kids and adults sit there and watch it. That's more or less what I thought they were marketing to, is just like a cool, fun sci-fi kind of show for the whole family to watch, whereas I feel like they fell really short on it. And I feel like a lot of it is Moffat just kind of losing touch with the entire show and not going back to its roots. He's just kind of gone, let's add new things.
Yeah.
Instead of the world constantly evolves around them and what else is happening in the lore of the universe. You don't see enough of that in Doctor Who. You actually don't.
There is not enough consistency.
No. Which is where...
Doctor Who is one of my criticisms. Yeah. I would love to see a bit more universe development in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Consistent universe. So
yeah. Which is where Filoni literally just thrives because he literally goes, okay, this happened back here. Let's bring it forward now and solve that.
Mm.
And it's like you get some heartbreaking episodes and you feel for it because there's so much in the world. That's what I think Doctor Who constantly falls short on.
Moffat did actually attempt to go back and pick up on old stories, and he does that and bring back...
He did that with Clara as like the girl who saved the Doctor, and I'm sorry, that just... That was forced.
Yeah, so
in some of the other stories, like bringing back the Zygons. And...
Yeah, there was one episode, there was one moment in Bill's era that was just amazing. And it was like, I think it was in the first episode with the pilot, the alien that was shifting through the water. They go and meet the Daleks, and the Daleks are fighting another bunch of people that look really weird. They've got like pink long hair sort of thing, and they're being blown up and just slaughtered by the Daleks. But that's a reference to a Tom Baker episode.
Oh, the Daleks and
this other race are basically their robots as well, and they're locked in battle and can't win. There's no way the Daleks can defeat the Mavellans, and the Mavellans can't defeat the Daleks, so the Daleks revive Davros to win the war. And so that tiny moment was kind of the aftermath of that, was Davros ruling the Daleks again and just decimating the Mavellans.
But like in that same...
And that's it.
In that, that was, same episode, they look back at a picture that he has on his desk of one of his old companions. And they never look back at that.
No.
I was hoping something to do with Bill. I wanted to see like a repeat so that he has to relive his consequences that he makes and go, I can't keep doing what I'm doing. But they never did it.
No. Mm.
They had so much to work with and they just shat all over it.
They haven't picked up on Susan, and that she's a Time Lord that gets left on Earth. What happens to her?
Yeah, Susan. Yeah. It's incredible. Nobody talks about it. Yeah.
Like, well, Bill could have been Susan.
Yeah.
But Bill no one did. Because everyone complained that Bill was in it.
Yeah.
Bill was great.
Bill was amazing.
Yeah, after Clara, I loved it.
I actually sat down and watched Bill's arc and loved it. That was it. I refused to look at anything else after that.
I was actually a bit upset when Bill...
I was pissed.
She wasn't given what she deserved.
No.
She wasn't.
It was a bit
Bill was treated like Martha, and that was just rude.
Yeah, Martha was absolutely. And you know, I love Martha in the sense that she wasn't some magical like frigging Clara, where she's like she's the master of the university. Mary Sue.
That's it.
She's absolute Mary Sue. Same with Rose, you know, where it's like, there's some kind of magical destiny.
Oh, Rose is coming back.
Oh, my God. She's the answer to it all. Or Donna, the Dr. Donna, you know, she's the answer, you know.
I disagree. I like Donna.
You know, ultimately, it turned into these companions were all like...
godlike beings.
Godlike, destined. You know, they kind of tried to raise them up to the level of the Doctor, but the Martha...
But that's because they don't know how to write women.
Yes.
But the that's question what it is. Do you prefer Rose, Clara, and how they treated those companions to Victoria in Tomb of the
Sun? Oh, my God!
Women!
The women stay over here. The men are going to go to the basement and fight.
I actually liked her. I really did. Because although she was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
She didn't like step out and do anything about it. But she was clearly like,
do not talk to me like that.
She was smart and could have done a lot more.
She felt like Alice from Alice in Wonderland. I don't know if you saw the 1999 film.
Yeah.
No. Yes, she sounded exactly the same as her, and she just did such a wonderful job. I actually really rate
Victoria
her.
Victoria is from which era?
She's
from
Victorian
era.
But she also played Alice in a play as well. Like, so she's just got like that mild curiosity that could totally spark into something beautiful. But yeah,
I love the shade she was given that other woman. She knew she was a bad guy, and she's like, she's not going to give her any pleasant.
No.
And she was at points just kind of remarking on things and stuff, and she was trying to help out in every way she
could. But the men were shouting her down.
But she was doing it in like a way that, like, say, any of us was to be picked up by the doctor. Mm-hmm. She'd be going, is that really a good idea? Are you really going to talk to me like that?
The doctor's been grabbed by a Cyberman. Like, let's grab something metal and whack the Cyberman. Yeah. Not much else I can do.
But it was a nice portrayal.
That was interesting. I don't know whether I missed it and she was told to do it, but very first episode, she walks into the room and she goes straight to the cavity area and starts, like, doing this, and then she gets shut in, and I'm like... Yeah. Why?
Oh, no. She was looking at it. She got told off, and then she ended up standing in it going, I really need a rest as it is. And then the bad guy shot her in. I could do
some revitalizing.
She was trying to be silly.
She was also commenting on the size of the things.
She was trying to be silly and fun, and I thought that was nice given the situation.
So who do you think the audience of that would be today?
Anyone 6 foot under.
Anybody 6 foot under, right? So it's purely a relic of the past.
Only diehard Doctor Who fans.
Doctor Who fans.
I think maybe if they're a fan of old sci-fi anyway, just because it's nice as a historical thing of... Like, the plot isn't bad, it's just... It's something that you could write better today.
I think story writers would go back and watch it.
Yeah, because it's not badly paced.
Or should go back and watch it.
It's
slow,
it's not as though it's a bad way to tell the story. It's just a really awkward story compared to how we see it now.
Yeah.
Like, why would a logician go to the metallic people and try and justify rolling over them?
I don't think I'd actually suggest watching it to any of my friends, even if they are diehard Doctor Who fans. And that's generally how I feel regarding a lot of the sexist, racist TV shows. But I mean, if someone was doing like an anthology sort of thing or wanted to become a screenwriter, that would be worthwhile watching.
And some of the outdated special effects do get kind of redone to a degree and done better in the animated reconstructions that they did for some of the episodes that were just gone. So the moon base I watched completely animated. It's still got all the audio there from the original moon base episode. So you've still got the terrible Cybermen in it. With their robotic, was the musical?
It's a jaw harp.
Jaw harp.
With jaw harp kazoo mixture played by a robot.
So some of the audio is terrible, and the audio effects sometimes are bad, but it's easier to watch almost.
So what do you give it, Angus?
Out
of doctors.
Counting both regenerations of Tennant.
Oh, God. I don't even know where we're at now, then. Like,
15? Yep.
Who was 14? Was Peter Capaldi?
No,
Tennant was 10 and 11.
Oh, War Doctor. I'm forgetting the Doctor.
War Doctor.
Of course, yeah.
Right, so I guess out of 15... I do like the old Who, so I'm biased in this, I will admit. And I like the Tomb of the Cybermen. I'm easily, like, 11, 12 out of 15. I'm a fan of the story and these older Cybermen. Just prefer old Who Cybermen to haunting. New Who. They are. They're more... chilling.
But that's all they have going for them.
Yeah, that's literally all they have. Definitely not speed.
Despite having some speed.
The epitome of like what people think people in full plate armor move and walk like. Very inaccurate.
Yeah, I think they never quite explored the zombie connection to these things. They are the living dead in a lot of ways.
Oh, they definitely tried to in the Danny Pink when he died. Suddenly, all the dead people became Cybermen. They tried to there.
Yeah, but that wasn't...
Because, I didn't even think of it being zombie-like at all. I just think of them being Borgified.
I feel like...
Yeah, just always felt like...
That's a good point. I feel like the Borg were just always the better Cybermen.
Like, there was the one episode on the carnival planet or something with Matt Smith and like the whole bunch of Boy Scout Marines sort of people. And every time they fired a weapon at the Cybermen, like after a couple of rounds, the Cybermen would adapt and be able to cope with it. And it's
did someone just watch Next Generation?
It literally just felt like Next Gen Cybermen, where you just hit them with anything three times, and suddenly the phase frequency would be adapt to it. Sort of thing.
Perfect example of like showing what you could do if you looked at all of the older material, right?
Yeah.
Like, someone clearly, one of the writers of Next Gen, went, "Okay, that was really cool. Let's make it a bit more
Yeah.
Over the top, amped up.
I actually like they had the little Cybermen bunk things. And oh, I know that. Yeah, and they had those like, on the new Doctor Who episodes. And I went, oh, that's interesting little thing. I didn't realize that's actually something from old school Doctor Who.
Yeah. Well, this is the episode that's they're introduced in. Yeah, but the eyes. These ones have eyes that look like eyes, and they look organic. Yeah. They look a bit weird. Is that what they do with the eyes then?
From Cybermen.
Cybermen, they just stitch them into the Cybermen.
That's what they talk about in Tennant's tenure, is that they actually keep the person inside, but they kind of General Grievous them.
Yeah.
Cut them up. Why are you just all out with the Star Wars references?
It's more interesting.
And playing Old Republic. Yeah, the addicts. Yeah, we're sending them off to clinics.
I was asking Angus earlier, where would you sit this compared to the episode we watched last night of Rebels? And he was like, oh, it doesn't compare.
Well, some of the writing is really, really good. And Dave Filoni, the person behind it, is helping out with The Mandalorian. And so he was the one who came up with the idea of having the, I think it was R5 unit or something, the red astromech in the first episode of Series 2 that was from the A New Hope episode. It was a very old Star Wars reference that he referred back to, basically.
But he looks back at the old episodes and the old lore and stuff and brings it forward and gives it reason. And that's why I was actually using Star Wars as an example in this sense, because
it does create this continuing universe.
Doctor Who doesn't, and I care more about that than I have about any other show, because it's just so expansive.
Yeah.
And it's so... I know you love arcs and stuff, but I love world building and lore.
Yes.
You don't get that in a lot of stuff.
And Doctor Who doesn't do that as well as it could do.
No, it really doesn't.
It's
something
that has disappointed me. Yeah. It's like a world building and frustrating. Yeah. I'd like to see more of that.
Mm.
It's, why I like Star Wars, Star Trek, stuff like that, because they just...
In fact, in world building terms, they keep putting problems in their own way.
Yeah.
To the point where they ended up during Tenet, was it? Resetting the entire
beginning
of resetting everything, going, oh, this is a new universe entirely. We've broken the old universe, so
and
we need
don't
to
know who he is and
too many large scale and Daleks and stuff like that that everyone knows aliens exist, and it disconnected reality of Doctor Who potentially happening somewhere else.
But counterpoint as well, it's like the first couple of seasons of first season before Tennant,
Christopher Eccleston,
that one, and David Tennant in his first couple of new seasons at the start of his tenure, they were really good. Moffat actually did really good because he brought things back from previous episodes and kind of drew links and stuff. And like
Moffat was just a writer then; he wasn't the showrunner. That was Russell T. Davis, wasn't it?
Yeah. There was Matt Smith during episodes. People were going continuity, and then it all came together at like the very end of one of the seasons for Matt Smith, who was trying to save the world before it gets burnt up by his TARDIS. And it's like, oh, he's not wearing a jacket in this scene. And then it's like, this is why he's not wearing a jacket. This is what he's doing here. This is what's going on here. And I like that. That is
clever.
Awesome.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, that
right?
Clever.
I like
that
clever writing. Clever. But Doctor Who goes, oh, yes, we're clever, but are you?
They make mistakes. Like, even Russell T. Davies, who did all those big things, realised he messed up with, like, when he introduced Donna. Donna had never seen aliens before.
Yeah.
Because of all these convoluted ways. Yeah. And he's just going, Cybermen? And I was in Fiji. They had Cybermen in Fiji. Scuba diving. It's just like, these really just twisted.
For her, though, that was just showing how completely self-absorbed and battered she was before she met him, where
definitely.
She couldn't even see past her own nose. And all the stuff would be happening, and she'd be on the phone to her girlfriend talking about Saturday night drinks, you know.
Yeah.
Which that was their way of kind of working through that, but it was...
But I like it, though, because at the very end you're going, wow, she's grown so much, and then she has to go back to the same person she was. And
that was the brutal thing about Donna.
Okay.
On that note,
they did the same thing with Jamie. They wiped his memory at the end of the second Doctor.
Yeah.
So he was all the way through the second Doctor in basically single episode of Broughton.
Yeah.
And he had his mind wiped by the Time Lords and didn't remember any of it. Yeah. And went back to the Highlands and basically probably be killed.
I will admit, I did like that Doctor too. Mm. The second Doctor was really cool.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
He was good.
That was notable. He was funky fresh.
Yeah.
But
But he would never say it.
He wouldn't say funky fresh.
Yeah, he's too old for that.
Yeah.
Also, you'll notice we've got a little plastic figure of him here, and it looks like he's holding a sonic screwdriver. Patrick Troughton didn't have a sonic screwdriver. The third Doctor was the first Doctor with a sonic screwdriver.
Correct.
He is holding a recorder.
Correct.
That's right.
Because he's in episodes just skipping down around the place with a recorder playing.
Yes, he plays the recorder.
He's what I imagine you to be when
that's,
you're
that's
old.
How he's whimsical. He's quite whimsical because he sits there thinking with his recorder, and people are going, Doctor, we've got to do something. He's there playing the recorder, looking whimsical. It's like a Tom Baker with his yo-yo.
Yes. Yeah.
If you think about the Doctors as being these kind of chaotic gods, it's like he's got this kind of pan energy where, he's literally playing his flute and he's being really chill, but then he puts his angry face on and holy crap!
Patrick Troughton was a really good actor, probably one of the best actors.
Yeah,
I could see his face in one of the scenes where someone was like, oh, I'm dead, and he's like, so anyway. Let's deal with this Cyberman, Shelby. That was very dramatic. You shouldn't get paid for this, dear.
So Adventure in Space and Time covers that whole transition where the beginning is of Doctor Who, right through to the end of Hartnell, and when Troughton walks in, that's sort of the end of the dramatisation. But very good.
I was watching Adventures in Space and Time.
How about you go off and do something?
Yeah, do some silly sci-fi show.
It was a bit like, they were kind of set up in the corner to fail, really. When they say, these are the ones we don't know what to do with, we just stick them there, and then they can fail, and then we can move on and just get rid of them. And apparently that's what Shrek was. By DreamWorks, and apparently if you were, I guess, sent to Coventry, if you were doing the wrong thing, you got sent to work on Shrek, and I think it was Prince of Egypt.
Yeah.
That was the one that was the Oscar fodder.
That was terrible.
I know, exactly. And so all of the people that rubbed everyone up the wrong way and didn't play nice all got sent over to Shrek, and Shrek became the big success. Yeah. Because no one cared. No one was paying any attention to them, and they could just do whatever they wanted.
DreamWorks put their heart and soul into everything that they did. Like, anyone that was working on the project ended up caring about it a lot. And they ended up doing How to Train Your Dragon. And the second one, they missed out on the Oscar because Disney got it. Because Disney wanted in on that 3D animation. They won with Big Hero 6. Which was very poorly written, really, really terrible animation compared to How to Train Your Dragon.
I've never even heard of Big Hero 6.
Don't bother watching it.
I cried the first time I watched it, but then I've gone back and watched it again afterwards. I'm like, but we went back and watched How to Train Your Dragon a few years ago, and oh my God, how good is that?
Yeah. It stands up today.
I didn't give it the time, and we put it on for Mackenzie, and she fell asleep halfway into it, and we then went on and watched the next.
Did you watch the TV series?
No. But
watch the TV series.
Is good too.
Yes.
Ah.
First season, very, very bad animation. Clearly just like is this going to work? And then you just see it all change over. And like the animation is high quality. The story is amazing. They take elements of the books and they really run with it.
Do
their own thing. So it's very different. Very, very different.
Because on Netflix, a lot of the DreamWorks and kids' movies have all been turned into. So there's a Trolls TV show, there's a Boss Baby TV show, there's a Train. Yeah. And they just kind of go, this was successful at the movies. Yeah. Let's just regurgitate.
We've got all the assets, so we can just give those to the people
sound-alike voices and just kind of, throw something together and they know that they're going to have people watching it, kids watching
the
it.
The best part is it had David Tennant everywhere. Mm. Like, he was every second background character. And they had Gerard Butler.
Oh, okay.
They actually got Gerard Butler in for the entire thing.
Oh.
Yes. As stoic. It's beautiful.
Yes. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as you can tell, that was Tomb of the Cybermen.
That was a relevant segue, by the way. I know you're going to cut that section out, but it's a relevant segue because we are talking about doing kids' shows in the next few years.
Also, we were talking about putting love and effort into the TV shows and how Doctor Who falls short on that.
So, I think a lot of love and effort has gone into Doctor Who.
Hashtag Star Wars.
You know what? Maybe not love and effort, but an incredible show that we're just about to finish watching is Mr. Robot.
Oh, Mr. Robot is fantastic.
Holy moly, that show is it's just so good. And I can't even say anything about it because I just don't want to give anything away. It's just too good.
We will do a special next month where we all talk about the shows we've watched through the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have a great time of that. We'll talk about our two shows non-stop.
Yeah.
Clone Wars and Rebels.
And Mandalorian.
And Mandalorian. Yeah. We've got three shows.
Part of which, look at that. So part of which will be conducted inside the Cone of Silence.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the new season. But that's right.
Oh, that means we'll be the only one that will be able to hear.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Seems so long ago, doesn't it? That's almost pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty locked down.
Picard. Oh, we've got to make a cookbook. Yeah. What to watch and what food to watch it with.
Yes. Yes, that would be That's a really good idea.
My contributions are usually things like banana butties, so
Okay, so what was the food to watch with this episode then?
I think it's...
Headphones.
Gotta be some sort of biscuits and cheese, like an old English cheddar and...
Wensleydale.
And crackers, those English crackers, dry.
Dry English crackers, dry you think?
And a cup of tea.
Yeah, definitely a cup of tea.
Yes.
Fairy floss and a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Yeah, fairy floss and a cup of tea. Cosmopolitan cocktail. Just go with that.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Right, Blanc in a coffee mug.
No, the English didn't drink Saint Blanc back then.
No, I'm saying like this episode was
gin in a teacup.
Gin in a teacup.
You don't want to remember this.
Okay. So that was it.
We're not letting you finish.
Having too good a time.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Gin and teacup. This is great.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for being here for all 3 hours. This is the power of the TV clip.
Now we're going to start the fourth part of this episode.
This is getting as long as an old Doctor Who series.
So we'll see you for next Doctor Who, where we promise we won't talk as long as this. Well, we're lying, of course.
Next Doctor Who.
Next Doctor Who.
Next podcast.
Next podcast. Well, the next Doctor Who is going to be in about a year's time. So, So that was Doctor Who, Tomb of the Cybermen. And we'll see you next podcast, which is what?
Next. It's his choice. So.
Two choices, because it's Christmas as well.
We're doing the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah!
Muppets Christmas Carol, and maybe Thunderbirds.
The Cham Cham.
Do the Cham Cham. That is so awful, that episode.
I was thinking of Lena and Woodley's Goodbye Tour, where Frank's like, I don't have a translator for the deaf, but I think I can do it easily. And Colin gets through the entire thing, and then he goes... of, and Frank's like, I don't know what to do for of, so I'll just turn off a light switch and walk around in the dark, but I turn into a thunderbird. That's all I know.
Okay, so that's...
Shit, that was recorded.
It's recording.
Oh, well.
Okay, guys.
Okay, see you from the group.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
I'm glad we're not live.